we're buying those lots, both of them, to start it earlier. So I just need more information.
Well, and I would also like to hear, because that's what we're here for, is look at ideas, look at possibilities, and try to pick the best one. So the people that have created this plan, and Dorn, I'd like to hear from the staff. But the other issue is, if we don't buy it and somebody else does and builds a house on it, then our plan is in deep trouble. And that's
well. That was my other thought.
That's
because
an issue that needs to be in the mix here.
Because I remember years and years and years ago, I ended up meeting the individual. We did something similar to that back in the late 1990s here, and the town ended up purchasing the property after it was developed because the house flooded because of the empty lot next door of it. So that's my concern also. So I think we should buy both. But I don't want to see us waiting 2 to 3 years before we do something. So that's what I want to hear.
Well, I think that the staff is here and prepared to do that. And you're right, but the property is uniquely situated. It's available. It could be time is of the essence for that. So, Mike, who I defer to you on how you wish to present.
I'll just say, that is the main concern, that if we do not take the opportunity to buy it, then someone else will. And they will either refuse to sell it to us, sell it at a higher price, or they will develop it. And either one could potentially put it out of our range, our price range. So it's a unique opportunity that doesn't come along very often. As far as the timing, we do want to finish going on Public Works Building B. The site plan that we're going to be having the architect and engineer work on will include that pond. Then it's just a matter of the construction funding and then when that gets done. I mean, it's been typical if, given limited funds, we phase these projects, but we'll have to look at that. I mean, understand the concern. They're not wrong choices, but it's just a choice of making an immediate impact versus a longer term.
And Mayor, can I comment on that, please? And that to me, Michael, is 100% the point. It's not that we couldn't find a way, Gary, as you're saying, to purchase both properties, but if we can purchase them and set them for 2 years or 3 years, our flooding will continue to get worse. What I'd like to see is purchase one lot, get it started. That one lot might work miracles. I don't know. And I don't know which lot that would be. But if you look at, again, the spreadsheet that Michael gave us on our reserves, if we go through exactly what we've talked about, and I think I'm looking at the old one, I think it's up to 300 now, but in 27-28, our reserve for our land acquisition will be down to 219,000. I think that's the old one, so it might be three. Mm-hmm. So then that means we'll be pulling money out of our other reserves potentially to try to start these programs. And Bill, we've all talked about, we worked hard trying to get our reserves up to where we are, and we don't want to tap into those. And we have to stop pulling money out of reserves to pay for the other items like the lease vehicles when they come out. We've been using that land acquisition for a lot of things. That's going to have to stop.
Yeah, I sent you two spreadsheets earlier today. This is version one, and this shows the fire station appropriation match being shifted into 27-28, and then the Transform 386 match if needed. And then what you have, these are the estimated reserves, so it starts at the top. That's what we're left over with at the end of each fiscal year. You add in the revenue. That revenue is estimated to grow by 3% each year. Subtract out the fire truck payment, which is obligated for 7 years, and then that's what you have left. So this version shows the Transform 386 match at $215,000 if needed. That's if the legislature does not fund the request. Then if we chose to proceed with that, then we would be on the hook for that amount. And then could you put on the second one?
Or more, correct?
I really don't think it'll be more, but it could be. I mean, these are, like I said before, it's conservative estimates. It's on the high end. Okay, and then here's what it looks like if that is not needed. And then, so we wind up at the beginning of 27-28 with 681,000. So you can see, and then if you can you scroll over to the chart? Yeah, and the down, so that's what that would look like. That's what we would have at any given year, you know, with what the known costs that we know at this time.
Mike, Public Works projects, are there grant application opportunities for that?
Are you talking about for the site plan?
Anything.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. I mean, it was identified as a critical facility.
It is. It is a critical facility.
Something that we could look at through the Resilient Florida program, for sure. You know, the problem with grants is that they do take time. I mean, that's just it. And then the what we find ourselves in the situation is you can't build or do anything on those projects before the grant agreement has been approved and the money becomes available. So if you go that route, you're getting the money, you're getting a lot of help, up to 50% with that program, but you have to wait until the money becomes available through that next state fiscal year. It's a decision that has to be made.
Okay. And in terms of retention ponds in general, if you buy two pieces of property, nothing is requiring us to do one large pond. We could start with one.
That's correct.
That's true. And that's the key, because there's no way we should let that property go. But I just want to see us doing something
right away, sooner,
because South Turn Circle, as I said, I mean, the pictures that Dan puts up and during Ian and Nicole, I mean, we've got to do something. So I just would like, I think it's a no-brainer concerning the purchases of property, because I don't want to take the chance of it being lost. As I said, what happened to a person we ended up meeting, I don't want to see that happening. So I think my opinion is we buy it and just figure out a way to at least get one done, mm-hmm. and then start the other. We just have to do something to collect water.
And Bill, I agree 1,000%. I just want to know where the money's going to come from. And again, we've batted it back and forth several days. And I'm all for buying both of them as long as we can get started. But us buying property and just sitting on it, waiting for our money to accrue, is not helping our residents. And that's, I know it's part of the process. I get it. But I'm with you, Bill. Tell me how we're going to get started and when. And how are we, if we use the 350 that I said we might be able to use at Public Works to do the retention there, where's that money going to come from? Because Building B right now, we're sitting at $157,000-ish to build Building B, and it has nothing to do with retention, correct?
Right, that's correct. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that Building B, that was, keep in mind, that was a much simpler design under a former Public Works director, and we've changed that based on, I believe it was August, when we brought that to the council. So it's something more now. That is going to be more expensive. And then when you throw in the pond, if you want that done, it's going to be designed in the same phase. If you want to construct it in the same phase, then, you know, that's additional funds. But I think, really, it'd be having a pond, both of those properties are within the service area that we're talking about, the stormwater service area. And so there will be an improvement if either one of those ponds is built. Yeah, I mean, there are no quick fixes here for this stuff. I mean, we're basically talking about retrofitting the entire town. You know, so we can only do that at one pond at a time.
So an initial positive impact that we could have if we purchased the two properties would be one retention pond, knowing that we're working towards a long-term plan and nobody's going to build a house on the other property.
Correct.
That's
and that will be a huge help, because these properties that we're looking at are a couple feet, 1 to 2 feet below the crown of the road. I mean, they are low spots already. They're in the 500-year floodplain, so they do flood, and they get very, very wet. And so just by keeping that in its natural state, that is holding water right now during rains. If you put a house on there, then they're going to build up, potentially adding up to 3 feet of fill, maybe even more. Mm-hmm. And that's going to affect the flow of water through that area. It's going to eliminate its storage capacity to hold storm water, and it's there won't be any benefit to the town.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I make one more comment?
Yes.
And I will vote yes for this, if you will give us a plan ASAP of how we can take one of these lots and make a retention pond and hook it into our current retention pond that's on the north side of South Turn Circle. That would appease me greatly.
Yeah,
they
connect physically to the one on the south side, but yeah, no, we understand the direction.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Does anyone in the audience have any questions? Yes, Mr. Bullard.
Robert Bullard, 4802 South Peninsula Drive. I want to thank former Mayor Gary Smith for hitting the nail on the head about buying the land now and figuring out how to get the money in the future. I'd like to ask the town manager a couple of questions about this, if I could.
Well, we can start, and we'll see if it needs to actually go in a meeting with him.
Are all the easements in place for all the drainage aspects of this project?
Well, no, if you buy the property, you don't need drainage easements for it. I mean, we would just build on it. I mean, that would be the structure there. It is a platted subdivision, which has easements on it currently that would be suitable for a residential lot, but not over the entire thing.
Okay. Are there any easements on the three parcels right now?
The ones that, yeah, they are, again, it is, they were created when the subdivision was created. And it's like, so for example, like 10 feet along the back and 5 feet along the sides, you know. Then there is also a drainage easement. Actually, there is a larger drainage easement on this one, 58, that runs to the north. You can see it on the plat. It kind of runs in a northwest, southeast direction, following that, the contours of that property in the trough.
Okay.
So, there are.
So, you know, the state of Florida is shot through with drainage districts. You have a defined area that has a drainage problem. You draw a line around it, make a boundary, and say, you guys have special needs. You can pay for the drainage solutions. And ultimately, this could be a solution conceptually for the town to do something like that. If you're fixing your drainage problems, reasonably you should make a contribution that is not being spread over the entire town in some form or fashion. Kind of iffy to do that, but it's been done all over this state since the beginning of Florida. So it's something to think about.
Thank you, Mr. Bullard. Anyone else? Yes, Mr. Obeck.
Mark Obeck, 4758 South Peninsula Drive. I'm in total agreement with getting the two properties right up front. I would think that connecting the existing pond, or what's it called?
Retention.
Stormwater pond?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. To one, and then connecting another one after the fact would be more expensive than doing everything all at once. Would seem like it would be economies of scale if you could do the whole project all at once. The other question I have is whether or not funds could be diverted to this. Sore point, but the sidewalk expansion plan, you're sitting with money over here that isn't going to be spent for probably a couple years. This seems much more important, okay, than two feet. Let's say even if we go forward with the sidewalk expansion, it's probably at least 2 years out. This is an immediate need that we have that I'm sure all the town residents would view as definitely a higher priority in being able to move funds for a period of time and then replenish the sidewalk fund as time goes on over the next couple of years. Just a thought.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Can I ask a question? I'm assuming you're referring to Peninsula's sidewalk.
Yes.
It's my understanding that our contribution to that sidewalk has been in the design, and we're done. So we have no more additional expense for that sidewalk.
Well, yeah, I can answer that. So we're on the hook for 15%. The county is designing the project for us through our local agency program agreement that we have. They have told us in the past that they expect our 15% to be consumed or spent through the design process, but there's no guarantee for that. We've actually already spent about 200,000 for their time to design up to the 60% plan so far. We have, I believe it's 1.1 million based on the cost estimates for our engineers total that we expect to be spent, but it's ultimately going to come down to the project as a whole, you know, design and construction, wherever that winds up.
Thank you, Mike. Are there any other questions? Any other comments up here?
One comment. I did a little research on potentially the cost of what a retention pond could be, and of course it did vary, a cleared lot versus a treed lot and yada yada. But the basic thing that I found was anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000. And again, Michael, that is just, yeah, that I was really kind of surprised. Now, again, understand that is analyzing in the state of Florida, and they talked about, you know, how they would keep the water in. There was different variations, but it was 50 to 100 was a rough number. Now, there were some that were upwards of over 200, and that's the email that I sent you. But, you know, if we can get that done, you know, and if you look at the slide over here and look at all the items, can you take that real quick and slide the one you're on, just slide it back that way where we can see. If you look at everything that we pulled out of our land acquisition fund for this year, I'll make that statement one more time. We have got to stop pulling things out of land acquisition. We've got to find ways to either do without it or other ways to pay for it where we can get that land acquisition back. It's not a slush fund. I know we talked about it when we first opened it up for the fire truck. So we need to be very careful with that fund going forward because of projects we have. One last statement. And Michael, I think you know what I'm getting ready to ask, but the stormwater utility fee that we're working on, that will hopefully go into effect this year or next year?
It would be next fiscal year. So yeah, we've already started talking with the consultant again, you know, to get that second phase up and running. And then that has to be, there involves changes to the code, and then that has to be notified, I believe it's January, then there's a second period in March. So that's our goal, is to get that done.
So again, that would help us with these projects as we continue to move forward, correct?
Great, yeah, the whole intent is to create a dedicated source of money for stormwater.
Right, that's it. Okay, thank you, Mayor.
Are there any other comments based upon Councilman White's comment?
I do have one more thing to add. I was going to save this to the end,
okay.
But I'll go ahead and say it now. We learned just yesterday that we received yesterday a settlement from one of our code enforcement lien projects to the tune of $120,000. That came through. They had, you may remember this, the RFM Properties case.
Yeah.
We initiated, with the council's direction, initiated the lien process against them to foreclose. They in turn sued us. They really didn't have any kind of case to speak of, so we won. They wrote us a check yesterday.
Good.
That came in.
Can we earmark that check?
There's our money.
Well,
that's
our
what
retention.
I said. Can we earmark that check?
Reserve. Use it for the stormwater.
It goes. Yeah, technically it goes into a revenue account, but then the council can appropriate that at a later time.
Mike, thank you so much. I know that it's been in litigation for a bit of time and everything, and that's wonderful news. Thank you so much. They cut the check?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like the check.
Well,
I want to do it.
Anyone have anything more to say here? Because if not, you want direction, Mike. Is that consensus or a motion?
No, motion.
You want a motion?
However,
your motion's good. We'll
yes.
make a motion.
Okay.
I'll entertain a motion.
Can I make that, please?
Yeah.
I'd like to make a motion for approval for staff to proceed with the letter of intent for lot 58 South Turn Circle and bring back a final purchase proposal for the town council's approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Okay, we are now down to, from the town council, Vice Mayor Smith, what would you like to share with us?
Well, I will share that I sat in for you at the Volusia County Mayor's meeting last week. And
there were
a lot of very interesting discussions, but the two important ones that came to mind was the discussion about the famous property tax issue. Everyone is totally concerned about that. We're not the only ones, and so there's going to be a lot of support there. And with tongue in cheek, I'd say the other one was stormwater problems created by development, which we certainly have done this. So that seems to be the two big issues in this county at this point in time.
Well, thank you again for going on my behalf. I appreciate that. Okay, Councilmember Villanella.
Well, a well-done session this time around, and I hope most of the folks appreciate the complexity of the decisions that we have to make. They're multifaceted, and they're not as easy as one would think they are, but because of the constructive analysis of what we go through, we get to the bottom line, and we always come with a consensus to follow through for the best thing for the town.
Thank you, Joe. Skip?
Yes, ma'am. On October 8th here in the town hall, I met with our town manager, Mike Disher, and our finance team, Kim McCall and Jerry Hall. I can't see Kim here. To start looking at our 26-27 budget process, first I want to say thank you to the three of you for giving me 2+ hours of your time. I titled this meeting our skull session. I would like to share a few quick recap and notes of this meeting. Before I begin, I want to share my opening statement that I shared with them. Permission to speak freely. We all have the same goal. No hurt feelings. You can tell me I'm wrong, and that's okay. This is not any way near a council member trying to tell you how to run the town. It's not allowed by law. Here are some key points. They got a chuckle out of my opening statement. I had to share with them about skull session. Jane remembers. That was back in my old U.S. food service days. Okay, here's some of the things we had. Can we develop a chart graph that shows the following information covering the past 5 years? Items I was looking for, operating budget without carryovers, operating expenses, salaries, benefits, capital projects, carryover projects, transfers within the budget, transfer to reserves, ad valorem tax budget as shown. To my surprise, not really, they cut half the meeting in half because they'd already started on the chart. So here's the first edition of the chart that they have started working on. And it's phenomenal. And Jerry, thank you and Kim both for that, and Michael, because I know sometimes residents don't feel like they're listening to, but a lot of this stuff, and Steve's already gone, some of these things were what Steve had asked for during the middle of budget season, and it's kind of hard to do. So thank you for that. And I told Steve, he told me he was going to leave. I said, I'll get you a copy of my notes because I want you to hear exactly what transpired. You know, Mike made the statement the past that we do not budget for reserves. My question was, should we? A lot of these things are still open, so I'm just going to tell you what we talked about. Should we? My question was, how did we add $1.1 million to reserves in 23-24 fiscal year? Possibly $1 million. Jerry told me about 7 or 8. So 7 or 8, possibly this year. How does that happen? Several factors that we discussed that will cause this and create this type of unbudgeted reserves is the best way to put it. and some of it is our budgeting process. Discussion continued on ways we could, why we're not using, ways that we're using last year's budget numbers and not using actual expense numbers. They agreed to take a look at that. Some of it is the way we've done in the past. Some of it they agreed that we could possibly do. And one example we talked about was our hurricane expense. Because again, we asked the question, were these hurricane expense numbers backed out of our next year's budget? Some were not. So there's ways we can tighten that up. Do we have a lose it or spend it end of year process? What I mean by that is, if there is a money left in a department's budget, do we have a lose it or spend it? If that's the case, then what happens is next year's budget is based off what is spent, which would be the budget, not necessarily having to spend that. There was an example of purchasing gloves and this, that, and the other thing. So that is going to be monitored. We did talk about performance merit reviews. We're discussed. We're continuing to talk about that. The MGT study, we talked about that, and the stipends. That discussion will continue. We talked about making sure that we review every department and make sure we're staffed correctly. And what that meant was not that we want to let anyone go, but we used an example of Mike Disher. And I said, Michael, you've talked about needing an admin assistant. Do we have anyone in another department that might not be fully, I'll say, utilized in their current capacity? Is that someone we could pull for you? So those discussions continued on, and thank you for that part. Review every program that we're offering and make sure that the time that we're spending is driving the results that our residents expect. And, you know, Jackie, one thing that, you know, I just happened to have your monthly report in front of me, and I wasn't picking on you, but we had four people that attended the grandparents' function. And you spent hours on that, hours on that. So I know there's, and Michael told me, there's a certain amount of functions we have to have every year for our ECHO grant. And I agree to that. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but we need to analyze those things and spend your time wisely doing something else. If Grandparents' Day doesn't work, let's move to Mike Disher Day. Thank you, Bill. Overtime review monthly. That's something that we all agreed upon, that on some of these monthly reports that we all get, council, that we'll start seeing that on our monthly reports sometime once we get past, we're all past the budget season now. And I think that'll be something important for us to track as council. The last thing I have, and again, this one's kind of up in the air. Mike and I talked about it again yesterday on the phone, but utilizing a cost-benefit analysis. And what that entails, I know you probably know, but it's a structured financial and economic assessment to ensure responsible stewardship of public funds be compared to the total cost against the expected benefits. And the example I used was 2 weeks ago now, I met with one of our residents at Public Works with Dan and Steve, and he was a lawn expert. He sold his company years ago. And he asked the question, he said, why did you buy a 72-inch mower? Well, Steve, and I patted him on the back, said, well, the 72-inch, why didn't you buy a 72-inch? We bought a 44, 48-inch. Well, it was $8,000 more. I said, good job. He goes, not necessarily. He said, if you had a 72-inch mower, you could make one pass instead of two, and you save time. I was like, oh, okay. So if we had the CBA, potentially that could be put on there. Yes, it costs $8,000 more, but here is the time that you would save. So that's just an example, Steve. So, and with the fire department, we all said 2 years ago we have to have five firefighters per shift. I stood right there at the podium and said we need five fires because it will help reduce our overtime. No one on council, no one on staff said, no, Skip, you're wrong, it won't do it. We need it. I ran as a council member. That was one of my platforms. We need 5 firefighters. I'm not saying that's a wrong decision, but it did drive up our cost of overtime. It didn't reduce it. So a CBA would have told us that as a council, that, hey, here's your initial startup cost, but then going forward, here's your extended cost. So that was just a few things. And again, you know, Michael and Kim and Jerry, thank you for the time. It was very helpful for me. And this is just a brief, small recap of a lot of things we talked about. Thank you.
Bill?
I think if you go one way with a 72, you still have to come back to go where you started. So I like the idea of the 44 because you're going both ways. But that's just, this
that
is my
me.
Opinion.
That wasn't me.
I know. Basically, everything I'm saying is going to be about the First Step Shelter. I send the report that I get monthly out to all the council people so they can see it. And they had the open house for the 1,000 people. We're over 1,070 now. And we busted 400,000 meals since we opened in December of 2019. I got a word from a executive director the other day, and she said, Bill, do I know this person? And I said, no. And she said, she gave me the name of the person and where they lived. And they made a $5,000 donation to the First Step Shelter in their husband's name, which I thought was really nice. And she sent a really nice thank you letter to them. Everybody has heard me say, you know, Volusia County, along with Daytona Beach, has been giving $400,000 a year. This past year, Volusia County voted to do $400,000, $300,000, and then $200,000 for 3 years. We're trying to figure out a way to make up that money. And we've held, like, this is going to be the fourth year of the gala, and we've held the expense, even though the Hilton has raised the money every month for the meals, we've held the line. Well, this year we've had to raise it, and so we're hoping we can get more sponsors. Hopefully we will go at the same tables. And the gala is February 7th. I was supposed to bring this big packet today, and of course I forgot it, so we'll wait until the next meeting that I'll hand out to the council members. And then Jackie, I've already talked to her about it, and we're going to go ahead and get it ready to put out into the Ponce Inlet, Town of Ponce Inlet website, talking about the gala, the fourth annual, the expenses, et cetera, hoping we'll get more sponsors. But we had of the ones that have completed the program. I hope you saw in the newspaper today about a possibility. Skip and I were talking about it before the meeting. We have people that have completed the program, and we can't put them in housing, not because they're not eligible, but they can't handle it. About 2 years ago, we started that process, and it started off great, but it died. But now we just got notification that we can pick up these built containers, and they convert to a two-bedroom, two-bath units. We've had one person, and we use the example, we have one person that has been at the shelter, completed the program for 2 years. 2 years ago they completed it, but they're not capable of going into housing unless they go into an assisted living housing. And there is no, right now, government-sponsored assisted living housing. So that person's been with us for 2 years. So we're looking at that. But we had a really nice event for the 1,000th in September. And I'm going to send out I'll get the information out concerning the gala. And hopefully some people in Ponce Inlet will participate.
Thank you, Bill. It was a lovely event that we went out. Okay, so a few things. September 24th, I had the opportunity to speak at the Port Orange South Daytona Chamber Government Day, along with the mayors from Daytona Beach Shores and South Daytona, and also our managers. Mike Disher was there as well, and this was an opportunity to share experiences of leadership and best practices. It was time well spent for all. And on that same day, I attended the Volusia delegation luncheon with our representatives, our senators, and we had a discussion about the next legislative session and a focus on Volusia Delegation Day, when we're going to go on October 29th to speak to the legislators on our appropriation requests. And we also discussed the concerns with SB 180 and property tax elimination. I chaired the Utilities, Natural Resources, and Public Works, the Florida League of Cities Policy Committee on September 26th, and tomorrow I have the second meeting in Orlando, where we begin to narrow down the issues for presentation to the legislature of our priorities and positions as they relate to environmental, coastal, and public works. We're focusing on stormwater management, water quality, and trees, to just name a few topics. I met with Representative Tremont, along with Dan and Mike, to focus on SB 180, property taxes, and our anticipated appropriation requests. The next Stormwater and Flooding Subcommittee meeting is scheduled for October 22nd at Daytona Beach Airport at 2 o'clock, if anyone wishes to attend. The subcommittee is working hand-in-hand with county officials to share information relating to programs and projects in the cities. The county recently launched a new flood mitigation and stormwater management newsletter to highlight ongoing efforts, programs, and projects that are addressing flooding across the county. And you can subscribe to the newsletter at volusia.org /newsletter. All municipalities have been invited to share our own updates and projects, initiatives, or success stories related to stormwater or flood management. I met with Dr. Balgobin, who is the superintendent of schools, along with their chief academic officer and a number of other individuals involved with the school system. And what we talked about was the work that the superintendent and her team has done bringing Volusia County from a D, a score of a D, to an A, the work they do for our students, future plans, and how mayors and other elected officials can help. I'll be speaking with them again at career days at schools, offering mentorships to students. So if anyone here is interested in any of that, speaking a career day, offering mentorship, let me know. I have a meeting scheduled with two of these educators in the next couple weeks to see what we can do to help, because we have many students in Ponce Inlet. And finally, last but certainly not least, I do want to thank the Citizen for Ponce Inlet news editor for their exceptional work. The caliber of that newsletter for this town is significant. The professionalism needs to be commended, and to the president, the entire board of directors, I just want to thank them for their work. So that is it, and I now turn to our town manager for any updates.
Thank you. Just a few today. First of all, I wanted to let everyone know that we've heard Votran is proposing to eliminate its permanent bus route in town. That's 17A. They want to substitute that with a on-demand transit service called VoRide. They're going to be holding public meetings in multiple locations in the county throughout October to gather feedback, including a virtual session on October 1st. If anyone is interested in that, you can go visit their website at votran.org. Then let's see, we're upgrading our athletic court reservation system. The system that we have now, that's called Hold My Court, is ending. They have announced that they are ending effective November 15th. So we have been working to update our system to replace it. And the first consideration being compliance with the Americans with Disability Act, and then also to ensure that it has the same functionality as the one we have now. So yeah, that we expect that to be up and running before the one that we have now is canceled. And then last, I just wanted to mention that our Planning and Development Department has been working very hard to make permits available, permit applications online. And so they've already started doing this. They've been rolling out a series of permit or permit types over time. They just released a new batch that people can use to apply for on October 6th. And then there's another set that's coming up on this today, actually. Next, they're going to be working on right-of-way permits and rental permits. So people can go online, they can submit their application, they can pay for it, all that stuff online. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Mike. Our attorney?
And just one, Mayor, thank you. We've been working on an ordinance updating your outdoor entertainment sound amplification permit process. Really, our focus when we started it was addressing issues on the back end of it with enforcement and how you enforce it, what are the consequences to somebody who violates it and repeatedly violates it. While we were working on that, the federal district court over in Tampa, it's an ongoing case. This is a preliminary order that it entered, but it did enter a preliminary injunction against the city of St. Petersburg's sound amplification ordinance. And so for that reason, we're kind of now we're getting involved in a part of it that we weren't involved in the first part, which is the permitting process itself. Fortunately, I practically speaking, you don't have the same problems here. They're the same that were giving the judge concerns with St. Pete. The general basis the court was looking at it there is sound is sound is sound. It doesn't matter if you're plugged in or not. And we've seen that in other cases. And so St. Pete's ordinance is very, the only thing they were concerned about was the amplification. Now, nominally, we have a similar ordinance. How it's been applied here has not, it's been that broader definition. So really what we're doing is we're moving away from that idea of sound amplification and to how I introduced it here, outdoor entertainment, which is really the issue that you're dealing with and have been using it to deal with is the outdoor entertainment. So what you see, it will be moving away from the focus on amplification and simply into the are you doing outdoor entertainment? What are you doing? How are you doing it? For instance, one of the issues the court points out, it doesn't matter if you have an electric amplifier set here, which is what the city, St. Pete, was arguing, is this is about the location of the amplification equipment. Well, what difference does it make if it's an amplifier sitting here or an acoustic guitar player sitting here playing really loud? They're both, one's acoustically amplified, one's electronically amplified, but when it comes right down to it, they're both amplified instruments. And so that's really what we'll be doing on the back end of it. Nothing will change for anybody who has a permit or is in a permit process. Anybody who already has a permit, the permit name that they have may change from amplification to entertainment. It could loop in some people that maybe weren't having to, but we're going to try to keep the same standard for what you had for when you have to apply, because not everybody who has outdoor amplification under your ordinance has to come in. It's based on that relationship to residential properties. And so that will all stay the same. Just before the meeting, I don't remember which conversation, asked like it was before this meeting, and from what I hear, I don't think it will really even broaden who's applying for amplification, because just like it was one of the items in your agenda, it was the parade. And you have marching bands that are applying for your outdoor amplification permit. Well, that's actually, they're not plugged into anything. It's just because you are almost using yours that you have now in the way that the court was looking at it over in Tampa, is that amplification is amplification is amplification. It doesn't matter if you're plugged into something or not. And so nominally, that's what the change we're going to make, is to make sure that what the words say lines up with actually how you're implementing it already. So, and hopefully that will be next month that you'll see it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that update. We are down to our final citizen participation. The Town of Ponce Inlet encourages engagement by citizens via a variety of means, and this is just another opportunity, if you so choose, to speak with us collectively for 2 minutes before closure of this meeting regarding any of the reports you just heard from the council members, the town manager, or our town attorney. So it's agenda items 14 to 16 only of the meeting agenda. Is there anyone who wishes to speak? Yes, Mr. Bullard.
For the town manager, if I could. We.
Your name on the record, sorry.
I'm Robert Bullard, 4802 South Peninsula Drive. Did we have any kind of formal response to the consultant's VOTRAN study that was done 3 years ago that was submitted here?
Was
there any formal response by the town to that?
I don't recall. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't think so. I did an analysis on that. And the town of Ponce Inlet, over, I think, 20-some years that the data in the study supported, the town of Ponce Inlet roughly received $6 million in subsidy for Route 17A. Mm-hmm. And that's embarrassing. We have no leg to stand on. It was in terms of stopping 17A, in terms of how much we have been subsidized up to this point. The other side of the equation is vote, and I'm saying this now because I'm not going to be able to participate in the Votran hearing. The other side of the coin is that the opportunities for Votran to be operated as an enterprise have never, ever been nearly realized. And I wish there were some way the town, county council could be brought into this to do that. I'm sorry I don't have time to do it right now, but it's something that should have been addressed in response to that study years ago. So there are opportunities for Votran to be an enterprise fund. Painting on the side of the buses is the beginning, but there's a lot more they can do. And maybe it will be enough to get at least some kind of bus service, transit service, continuing to the town. Subsidies are out. I vote against it. We don't want that subsidy for us anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Bullard. Is there anyone else?
Yeah, I do have a comment on that, and it's just a possibility. But I think I'm aware of the people that use that bus system are employees in the restaurants. Mm-hmm. Quite a few of them do that. And if we're trying to keep that, it would probably be interesting to call all of the restaurants, ask how many employees are depending upon that service to get the work to earn a living.
Well, I can share with you that I do have a meeting already scheduled with Bobby King, who is involved with Votran, and it's prior to the time that I believe Votran is going to come and speak with the council. So things are starting, and I think that's an excellent idea about the number of employees who use it, because I do recall a few years ago we did have some residents who came in here who were very upset about the thought that 17A was going to be stopped because that was the transportation for one person's child to get to Publix. So there are things that can be done. It is starting, and I'll speak further with Mike about preparing us for these discussions. But thank you. Thank you, Gary. Is there anything else? Okay. Well, then, seeing none, this meeting is adjourned at 3:47. Thank you, everyone. Yeah.